Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
I'm William Philip Arthur Archie Harrison Chewbacca Mountbatten Smith. Today...
You know what? It would be kind of awesome if they named the kid Chewbacca, just like straight up, in your face, Queen. This is Chewbacca Windsor, Prince Chewbacca.
The next one. Male, female, or whatever gender, it's going to be Chewbacca. Chewbacca Mountbatten Windsor. That's a handle.
Yeah.
I could get my hand
Prince
around.
Chewy? Oh, yeah.
Prince Chewy! Oh, yeah.
We're definitely not getting into the Marnicus League now.
No.
Anyway.
For the next hour, we're going to talk about the kid.
No, we're not. Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. And you can listen to us live online here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us anytime on CFRU.ca or on our podcast channel, which I will describe at the end of the show. For today, we're going to talk about some of the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And that includes Bill 21 in Quebec. It's the latest attempt to make French society more secular, and we'll talk about why they're trying to ram it through so fast and why a lot of people of color in Quebec are kind of scared. And then we will look at American politics through the lens of the opposition party, 21 people, actually 22 people, I found that out today, are running for the Democratic nomination. But who among them can take on and take down Donald Trump? And then finally, 1 million plants and animal species on Earth are in danger of extinction due to human activity, according to a UN report. But what are the odds that this is the first time you've heard that story this week? But first, speaking of the environment, it was kind of a big win for the federal government. Last Friday, the Saskatchewan Court of Appeal said that the carbon tax is very cool and very legal. Well, they said it was very legal anyway. And it was a 3-2 decision. It basically said that the federal government does have the right. I mean, it's one of these weird sort of legal things when you start like hearing from experts on the subject and you start sort of reading the legalese that it's not like we won. It's not like VE Day. For those of us who care about the environment and want to put a price on carbon. But what the decision did say is that the federal government is within bounds to set a minimum price on carbon.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Liberals are taking it as a victory, obviously, doing a little teeny lap, I guess.
Well, they haven't had a lot to celebrate lately.
No, exactly. So I saw Scott Moe talking about it a bit, and he said, we will see Canadians making a decision on this, but he's also hinting at a federal Liberal fail in the fall, I guess. He's kind of saying, well, you know, people are going to decide at the polls whether this is the decision or not, because every single thing out of their mouths, all of them these days, is carbon tax, unfair carbon tax and taxpayer.
Job-killing carbon tax.
How many times can you use that in a sentence is the plan.
Or Trudeau job-killing carbon tax.
Yeah.
Or Trudeau, or federal Trudeau job-killing carbon tax.
Various combinations thereof.
Yeah.
So much so, I think they should just come up with those generators like they have for the, you know, business lingo generator. You could have anti-carbon tax, anti-liberal slogan generator. Something he also said too, he was saying that it's time for Canadians to make a decision on our wealth generating industries, which sounds like it's right out of a business textbook or something.
Yeah.
It's not exactly, I mean, it is on message, it's sort of going off message, but just the tone of that and the way it's phrased, it's like, you know, you did the business certificate for a year and now you're just saying these things. We need industries that generate wealth. And damn it all if the, you know, the tar pond leaks and kills a couple of rare turtles. We don't give up.
Well, what was that thing they had at the Metro Toronto Convention Center last summer where they had like Sylvester Stallone speaking and it was like...
Oh, one of those motivational business things?
Yeah, like, and it's like even Sylvester Stallone had no idea why he was there, so we just talked about Rocky for 2 hours.
He talked about Rocky. Because you got to fight. Yes, we have to fight.
I mean...
We have to fight the tax.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like. And they consider the carbon tax an attack on the oil and gas industry. But there's never the... There's never the counter idea that the oil and gas industry are basically making a killing on the back of provincial governments who are, you know, then in charge of having to clean up sites and like having to remediate sites while they're selling oil for as cheap as they possibly can. And this is the same for a lot of industries here in Ontario. And our local MPP, Mike Schreiner, is actually pretty big on, you know, we can raise revenue by just selling our resources for like a competitive market value instead of like for dirt cheap. Like, you know, a million gallons of fresh Ontario water goes for, you know, $3.50. That seems a little disproportional, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the part of it that also the part of it they also don't mind our tax dollars going to subsidize oil and gas, as it does to a greater degree than any other G20 country. So they're mad at this very specific thing that adds to the price of oil and gas and apparently dissuades businesses, even though Shell Oil said they have no problem with a carbon price.
Oh, don't slam the job creators out, and they might take our...
I want to slam creators said they were fine with a price on carbon.
They might take our license away. I don't know. Yeah, actually, that's very true, because they, you know, carbon taxes, I remember hearing about it and looked it up again. Preston Manning, somebody of the Manning Institute, was somebody who was in favor. So was Patrick Brown. And I'm wondering, in retrospect now, is this part of the reason why he was so seriously chased out of being a contender for the Ontario leadership, PC leadership? Because he was for it.
Well, he was PC leader, but he was...
No, but I'm saying...
Nobody came to his defense.
Nobody came to his defense. But, you know, is this maybe sort of another... It's like, oh, good, we've gotten rid of him so we can fight the unfair carbon tax.
Right.
And you mentioned, too, about, you know, the oil and gas companies just doing whatever. There was that company this week that went insolvent and pretty much ran away and left 4,000 gas wells just orphaned.
Yeah.
No punishment, no repercussions, no anything.
No.
And as we know, or most people know, that there is no sales tax in Alberta. Taxes are super low.
Yeah.
And small business and corporate tax, if I understand it right, is some of the lowest in the nation. So they just keep saying taxes are too high. They don't tax anybody. So there's no means to remediate abandoned wells such as that. And if I heard it right, when Jason Kenney flew almost immediately to Toronto to meet with his good friend Doug Ford after, 4 days in the chair.
And to testify in at a parliamentary committee.
Yes,
about
so he just thought
how Alberta might have to secede. Although it's yet to be explained to me how Alberta seceding makes it easier for them to build pipelines in the rest of the country.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a challenge. They're just going to have to go due south, pretty much. Maybe they can become like the Puerto Rico of the prairies. We don't know. That may be a really bad comparison. I don't know. But yeah, so the resistance is fighting on, right, as McLean's called them. Well, I can't remember where I was going to go with that, but you know, Kenny flying here, and then he was like, yeah, we need to find market-based solutions for situations such as this company.
Carbon tax is a market-based solution.
Exactly. But this the company goes bankrupt, runs away. Oh, we can't do anything. So you want to find some kind of like, what are you going to do? Build condos in the abandoned well or something in the middle of nowhere? And then, of course, there's the potential that something like that could leak or cause some sort of not natural disaster, not an environmental catastrophe. And there's no accountability for it. Zero. And they'll come up with some way to blame Rachel Notley or Pierre Trudeau or Wilfrid Laurier or take your pick of whose fault it is but theirs, right? It's endless.
Right. They're so opposed to the idea of the carbon tax. And the basis of the court action was just silly. It's like the federal government has no right to impose a tax, and the idea is that the, you know, civil and property things are the jurisdiction of the province. Well, that means I think, and I'm not a legal scholar by any stretch, but if you're going to court and you're saying the federal government can't impose a federal tax, and the court says, yeah, you're right, they can't. Okay, well then, what does that do to something like the GST? The GST is a tax on property. You buy things. That you then, you know, computers, TVs, cars, what have you, all have GST on them. That's property. That's a tax on property. Next, are we going to get rid of the GST? I don't know. And then you have the
I'd probably love that.
But I mean,
it's unfair.
But I mean, that's the slippery slope, right?
Yeah.
Is, you know, is, can the federal government impose a tax on it? Can there be a federal income tax? Can they take, you know, a couple of cents on every dollar you make to go to CPP? That seems to be the absurdity of this. And then when you the Ontario case that was heard last month was even more absurd when you had the government lawyer getting up and go, you know what? If we let the carbon tax happen, the government will be able to tell you where you live. They'll be able to tell you when you can drive and what you can drive. Really? That's the slippery slope? I'm not sure how that person didn't get laughed out of court, because it's rank silliness.
Yeah, then this is the problem with the pure free marketeers, right?
Right.
Anything that smacks of let's use the S word and say socialism, or anything that's a net benefit that you didn't work for with the sweat of your own bootstraps, or whatever the hell their phrase they're using now. That doesn't even make sense. The sweat of your brow and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps.
There you go.
I think I got it finally. That's exactly it. It's like, well, what's next? It's always something like that. Well, what's next?
Right.
We got old age pension. That's just garbage. We shouldn't take care of old people. We shouldn't give autistic children money. Well, we'll give them some money, but we're not going to give them all the money. Yeah, it's like, and then it's the thin edge of the wedge. And then it's, everything should just be a free and open market, right?
The basis of this, too, is so silly, because they were making the argument this was being imposed on the provinces. Yes, it was being imposed on the provinces because every province was given an opportunity to adapt in its own way.
BC's had a plan for, 20 years or
something? Yeah. And Quebec, you know, has initiated a plan. And, you know, Alberta initiated a plan, although Kenny saying he in the campaign that he would scrap it. I mean, is that going to be the fate of that now? Because I think my hope would be that this court ruling sends a chilling effect and saying, you know what, maybe it's a bit silly to go to court and challenge things when courts are ruling against us and wasting all that money. Although the Ontario court is the Ontario government is doubling and tripling down, and Scott Moe himself, and I think like a wildly miscontextualized statement, said that this was game one of the Stanley Cup final and he was going to take it all the way to game seven.
It's ridiculous talk, because it isn't a game, right? I mean, it is. It's a political game.
It's a political
100%.
Game.
100%. As far as I can see, all of this is to beat on Trudeau.
Yeah.
It's like it's a Hail Mary, to use another sports thing, where you're going to throw and you're going to beat on him and hope that he's gone. And he might not even hear. Well, you're still going to hear about the carbon tax. Well, you still hear about the National Energy Program. That was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Somebody says Trudeau, and all, you know, when they do the streeters, it's always Calgary or somewhere. That National Energy Program screwed us royally.
Right.
It's like you were, 10 years old or something? You know, it's just, it's endless. Anything that, you know, sullies the Trudeau name, senior or junior, is,
and the blame never falls on the Alberta provincial government for not saving, for always splurging when the boom times are on.
Terrible royalty rates.
Yeah, terrible royalty rates.
Everyone in Norway is a millionaire or multimillionaire.
Right. You can go
everyone in Alberta is a schlub.
You can go to university in Norway for free.
Yeah.
Thanks.
It's like $1 trillion.
Yeah.
And they have 5 million people.
Yeah. Yeah.
That probably could have been the case here.
So, you know,
that's
what?
Pure socialism, though.
If Alberta wants to do something for the rest of the country, like they think they're so burdened to do, and we're not kind of beating up in Alberta, but
no.
They could, you know, raise those rates. Put money on it. Get more money. Put that money away for a rainy day. And that way, when the bus times come, as they always come, you're not racing around trying to blame everybody for, you know, the jobs are not being there anymore, especially for this industry, which probably isn't going to be around in another 50 years.
No, with every electric car that rolls off the line, right? But yeah. That sounds like crazy Marxist nonsense, Adam, so...
But to get back to the carbon tax thing, it really seems like there's nothing to do here other than just keep spinning the wheels and keep like wasting time, effort, and money. Because I mean, yeah, it's a slim majority, it's a 3-2 majority. But if you read the dissenting judges, it's pretty much just like their opinion that provinces are being bullied, and it's like the provinces aren't being bullied. The provinces were given every opportunity to initiate a change of their own. And when it comes to the Ontario court action, Ontario, which had a program, which was in partnership with like several different governments, including Quebec and California, that it was actually showing dividends. It was making like $3-4 billion a year. And then the new Ontario government comes in and says, like, nope, we're not going to do that. We're going to throw away this $3-4 billion a year. We're not going to do this. And then they go on this like month-long tirade about, you know, being punished by the federal government for the job-killing carbon tax. And it's like, dude, you know, you're being subject to the quote-unquote job-killing carbon tax because of your own decisions. And I don't know how that's going to fly in a court of appeal. I don't think it is.
Every time I hear rando people parroting that, it's like it makes you wonder what's going to happen in October. Because as I said, that's what it's all about. I don't know if it's 100%, but it's a good percentage of it, right?
I mean, it'll be interesting.
And then you say, what's your plan? And there is no plan. There's no plan.
No.
They have zero plan. Ontario Conservatives ran on no plan. Kenny's is like, well, we're going to have a plan. Well, we're going to reveal it later.
But, I mean, Ford proved that you don't have to have a plan.
No.
That if you hate the government hard enough, that people will vote for you anyway. The question, I think, is, will that work for Trudeau, who's only been in power for 4 years, as opposed to somebody like Kathleen Wynne and the Liberals, who had been in power for 15 years?
And that's the difference now, is that for 100-some-odd years, you knew that the government that was coming in had a plan.
Right.
And a manifesto or a program.
And then
this is just like, ha!
And then not to get too far into 2019, the election, I mean, but, you know, then it's going to depend on how well the Liberals are able to electioneer. It's going to depend on how maybe sick people are of the resistance at the provincial level, that they're probably not going to maybe not want to take a dive with the resistance on a federal level. And, you know, I think, you know, this is getting off topic a bit, but Andrew Scheer comes out the other day and says, you know what? You know that thing Trump did where he moved the embassy to Jerusalem? I like that. We're going to do that too. We're going to get closer to the United States.
Oh, such lack of original
and it's like,
thought, eh?
Dude, were you not paying attention all those years when Harper would try to align himself with George W. Bush and then the Liberals would issue like a dozen attack ads on that and all the moderates you need in Ontario to give you a majority government start sweating because they don't want a piece of that action? Anyway. Speaking of...
That's all we wrote.
Speaking of...
when the book slams down... That's topic done.
Speaking of boneheaded decisions, the CAC, the that's how I've heard it. The Coalition Avenir Quebec, the government,
CAQ.
The CAQ. We'll call them the CAC because I like that.
So where I come from, that means something totally different.
Anyway, I know, but okay. That's part of the reason. they are trying to push through Bill 21, which is the quote unquote secularism bill. That basically bars anyone who works for the provincial government from wearing any kind of religious symbol, be that a hijab, be that a crucifix, be that a turban. Dreadlocks are okay. This is part of the weirdness of it.
Wow.
That if it's a hairstyle or a tattoo that you wear for your religion, that's if it's on your hair on your body, it's good. It's okay. But
isn't wearing a turban a hairstyle of a sort?
Isn't that an interesting gray zone that this legislation really doesn't address?
No,
at all?
Not at all.
they're in the exact middle of 6 days of hearings, because when you're talking about, you know, secularizing the entire province, you know, you definitely want to cram that into a solid week.
A power week.
A power week, basically. I do wonder what kind of effect, like, the hearings, because if you see the coverage of the hearings themselves, it's kind of like one person after another, sort of one group after another, sort of coming up and saying this is kind of stupid. And then today they had one of the guys they kind of based this whole concept on. Gerard Bouchard. It's like kind of his research that is kind of driving this research that there's a negative effect to having people in authority, i.e. police and prison guards, wearing religious symbols in the charge of their duties. But even he's testifying against this legislation.
Oh.
Like.
So he wrote the paper and it's like, yeah, you know.
He's one of the guys who wrote the paper, yeah.
Somebody that I happened to catch a bit of who was pro was a woman from the Collectif Citoyen pour l'Égalité, and they call it La Cité, which means secularism, right? So this is what the Citizens Collective for the Equality and Secularism.
It spells out secularism is what we're getting at.
Secularism in en français. She equated the hijab with being fundamentalist.
Cool.
So you're getting a hint of where a lot of this, at least I think, is coming from. They're saying, Legault said he wants the bill to unite Quebecers, whereas it's going to do pretty much the exact opposite. In the cities, definitely, definitely no. In other areas where the so-called pure wool live, or the one I heard of this week was La Vague Bleue, which means the blue wave. I don't know if it's because of the waving of the flags. They had a protest, and it was hard to tell how many people were at this thing. I watched a little bit of the footage, but interestingly, there was one or two flags that had a fleur-de-lis with a crucifix superimposed on it. And I'm like, you guys aren't getting this. You're like, yeah, we want this thought, we want this thought. And dude, there's like a crucifix on your flag. But this is where it's going, though. It's not strictly, because there is a bit of nuance. But there's a massive element of this, which is anti-Islam and anti-Muslim immigration. Mm-hmm. French values, right? We want French values. You saw it a bit in France as well. You've got, what's her name? Marine Le Pen, right? Yep, leader of the National Front, the Front de la Nation, the fascist woman.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
She's the head of fascism in France.
Pretty much. It's like Muslims out, everybody out. We want pure French people, which is not even a thing.
Right.
It's not real. And they even said that this famously, the Quebec Parliament has a crucifix up in the back. And there was a shot of Legault, and he's talking the crucifix in the back. I wonder what they're going to do that with that cross on Mount Royal.
Right.
Like,
right.
Somebody going to climb up there and, like, take the hacksaw to it and knock it down? Oh, well, it's not a public service thing. It's a public park.
Right.
You go up, it's all lit up. It actually looks pretty cool. But...
Especially when you have people talking about, like, can I get on the bus in wearing my hijab? Like, not necessarily as a bus driver, although that would technically be municipal. But, you know, as someone who's just sort of getting on a bus, like maybe someone in a niqab getting on a bus, because part of this law too is you're not allowed to hide your face in situ or wear a face covering in situations where, you know, they have to check your ID. Well, you know, you have to have a bus pass, right? Yeah. I don't know what the bus pass looks like in different Quebec cities, but, you know, if it's something like a Metro card that has your picture on it, are you going to have bus drivers, like, stop people and say, okay, I'm going to have to see your face if you're going to want to take the bus?
I'm not sure how it's – and I was there not long ago, but I'm not sure how it's working there. But a lot of bus passes now are just a chip, right? So it could just be a chip reader thing, and then it renders the photo kind of moot. But I know what you mean, though, because
all it could take is, like, the wrong person, like, abusing their power, which is known to happen sometimes in government authorities, right?
Absolutely.
Like, you want to take the bus? Show me your face.
Yeah, and there'll be some kind of standoff. But, I mean, I think even – and part of this, too, is that they used the notwithstanding clause right off the bat, right? So they've evoked it out of the gate rather than trying to pass this law and then doing it after the fact. And then there's a battle royal about it. They're saying, no, this is a cultural thing. We get to do this. But am I going to write there's still a 5-year cap on the notwithstanding clause? They'll need to revisit this with a future government. But by then... I'm going to say that the damage is done, because as you were saying about just people getting on the bus or whatever, is it going to be, are people going to be hassled in non-public service situations because of the way they are dressed? They already are. Is it going to compound that and make it worse? Like, you shouldn't be wearing that. Get off, go to the back of the bus or get off the bus. Mm-hmm. We keep using the bus example, but it's a good sort of common whatever.
Right.
It's one of those things where it's like, where is this going to go? It's probably not going to go somewhere good, and it's probably not going to unite Quebecers.
Well,
but it depends how you see Quebecers. If you see Quebecers as this certain, subset of the original French settlers, then, well, okay.
If you see Quebec as white and French, okay.
Yeah.
Which is part of the problem of this, because there's pretty much no CA... I was going to say CAQ, but I'm going to insist on saying the CAC. There is no CAC MLAs representing anywhere in Montreal. And of course, where's the most diverse place in Quebec? It's Montreal. Once you sort of get beyond there, things get decidedly less diverse throughout the province. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, if I've got it initially, initially the Quebec Solidaire, these, we'll call them the super left party, who now have 10 seats.
The Qs.
QS. I think initially when they got together, they would have been for this, but they've seen the light, so to speak, and have completely changed their tune on this. And I think the Liberals and maybe the BQ, Liberals for sure, have come on side and saying this isn't a good idea. But there was a point where this is the fourth time they've tried to pass something like this, right?
And probably like the third government that's tried. Yeah.
Because it was the Bloc last time?
The PQ.
Oh, the PQ, sorry.
And the Liberals had one in 2017.
Yeah. So the Liberals were, and now the Liberals are like, no, everybody's finally come around. Not everybody. They've come around and said, no, we don't want this anymore. Which is interesting because, you know, it just proves you can change your tune for whatever reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully for good and positive reasons. Yet they still insist on this. And of course, it's sucking all the air. The headline in the Journal de Montréal was, Les signes religieux divisants, which is, you know, the religious symbols are dividing or there's a division.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how this is going to go down. You're driving a wedge between everybody in the whole province, right? And I'm wondering too whether this is going to spread.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it sounds like the kind of, sorry, I almost swore there, the kind of thing that we will possibly see in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'll find out that hijabs are costing taxpayers money somehow, an extra $10 for somebody to show their face. It'll be some crapola like that.
I think
this is crap.
I think we're a ways from there. Although,
no, I know that was a stretch, but it's like.
But I mean, there's a similar audience, and you see that on people posting on Doug Ford's Twitter feeds. They'll post responses that are utterly ugly, Islamophobic, racist, to things that have nothing to do with, you know, race or diversity or anything.
And he'll just kind of go, yeah, I don't really agree with that.
Well, he doesn't really respond.
No, he doesn't at all.
Doug Ford isn't really
even when
about
pressed, he's like, ah.
Doug Ford isn't really about engagement.
No.
But the thing is that there's a big problem with Islamophobia in Quebec that very few people in Quebec are willing to look at seriously. And people who are Muslim are sort of like the first line of people who are like affected by something like this because they are a very visible minority. And the other side of this too is that, you know, they want to make this about like, we don't want, you know, women to cover their faces because of, you know, religious things and being forced to do that. That's fine. I think it would be nice if we lived in a world where religion didn't mean you'd have to cover your face or having to be part of something like that. I mean, I as a secular person myself, I get confused about God's problems with the top of our heads.
That
seems to be a universal thing, considering that God is up above and always looking down upon us. So you think we would have to have a more appealing head from the Creator. Having said that, I don't think you win the argument of we're not going to force you to wear something by forcing people not to wear something. I don't think that's how you win this argument. And I think that's just logical, but I also don't think this is a logical issue too. I think it's emotional. No. I think it's responsive. I think that there's a big constituency that people like François Legault and certainly the PQ and at one time the Liberals thought they had to win in order to govern, and it's the people who don't like seeing different people in different dress and worshiping different things. And if nothing else, you know, taking the cross down in the legislature, I mean, at least that's an effort to egalitarianism. But I mean, no, this is like same crap, different pile.
Official open sources policy, wear whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is our official policy. We have it written down.
Within reason. I don't want to see any trucker caps in here.
This place is like built on trucker caps, man. Hey, a topic for another day, the fashion choices of
ironically,
community
only
radio.
If you're wearing them ironically. Okay, we will go to a break. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
they're going to have to give the kids some time. Maybe in about 20 years, all the youngins will be like, marry me, Archie. That was the band Always with, obviously, Archie, marry me. And that goes out to this year's Prince.
This year's Prince.
Chewbacca, whatever his name is.
Prince Chewie. So next year's Prince could be the winner of the Democratic primary. As we indicated earlier, there are 22 people who are all vying for the position. Could be at least one more hopping on at some point. I wonder, how many of them can you name?
Oh, boy. I did the quiz. There was a quiz online with like 16 pictures, and it was like, click who's running. Mm-hmm. And I think I missed one. I missed Cory Booker.
You missed? That's one of the most obvious ones.
That's exactly. It was sort of like, it's just clicking. It's like that thing where it's like, click all the frames of the car or whatever, and let's
see
through.
Here's the list.
Let her rip.
In alphabetical order. Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado, former Vice President Joe Biden, Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, Mayor Pete Buttigieg of South Bend, Indiana, Mayor Julian Castro, the former HUD Secretary, that's Housing and Urban Development, Representative John Delaney of Maryland, Representative Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, Senator Christian Gildebrand of New York, former Senator Mike Gravel of Alaska, current Senator from California, Kamala Harris, former Governor John Hickenlooper from Colorado, Governor Jay Inslee from Washington, New York Senator Amy Klobuchar, Mayor Wayne Messam from Miramar, Florida, Representative Seth Moulton from Massachusetts, former Representative Beto O'Rourke from Texas, Representative Tim Ryan from Ohio, Independent Senator from Vermont Bernie Sanders, Representative from California, Eric Swalwell, she's the senior senator now. I think she's still the junior senator. From Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, Marianne Williamson, who was an independent candidate for a California congressional seat, and then Andrew Yang, who is a social activist and entrepreneur.
And that's all the time we have today. Join us next week when we read, I don't know,
but of course,
the phone book.
Of course, everyone's talking about former VP Joe Biden, who was one of the latest people to get in and is sort of notable for like basically setting what's left of Donald Trump's hair on fire when he got in, to the point where Donald Trump's advisors were saying to him and then saying to reporters off the record, like, hey, you maybe want to lay off Biden, like maybe not tweet so much about him because you're kind of giving him like more... You know, help. He's like already pretty popular, so we don't want to like, you know, get him out. It's like, no, I'm going to tweet about
him.
Did
you get that, Donald?
I'm going to send out 60 tweets in an hour because this is ridiculous.
That Biden guy.
So, and then to give you a hint of sort of what's to come, we've seen kind of two examples of this week where Rudy Giuliani's out there talking about how he was trying to dig up some dirt about Biden when he was VP. It's a complicated story, but basically Biden and a bunch of other people government members in Europe were putting pressure to have this one prosecutor in the Ukraine turfed off this case involving like, an investigation of corruption. Biden's son, Hunter Biden, was on the board of this company, but because it was sort of, there was a lot of pressure from other European countries to get this guy off the case. And also there had been no developments in the case since 2014. It seems like kind of an empty shirt story. And then you had Pete Buttigieg, who is basically the first openly gay candidate who has a serious shot at the nomination. Jacob Wool, I found someone who was molested by Robert Mueller hoax fame, to do something similar to Pete Buttigieg, trying to find someone who will go on the record and say that Pete Buttigieg assaulted them and smear him for some reason.
Let the smears begin.
Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of what we're looking at in this race.
Yeah, and it's according to the mainstream media, like the race didn't really kick off until Biden committed to running. There was hints at it, and he made some kind of flub where the way he phrased it was like he was the candidate pretty much, or a candidate, one of the 20 some odd. I think it was 20 when I first did the initial homework on this. It's like, oh, there's 22 now.
Biden was the 20th.
He was the 20th. So, yeah. But of course, a lot of these people will not survive the... It will either leave before or definitely after the Iowa primary, which is on February the 3rd, 2020. That's when the boots really hit the ground and things kick off. Now, that's not to say that more people won't announce that they're running. There may be some waiting the wings to join in, but it's unlikely at this rate, since there's already 20 in there.
Well, the only one that people have an inkling about is maybe Governor Steve Bullock from Montana.
Right.
Because he could be one of those like sort of Midwest Democrats who might be an easy sell to, you know, all these people in the states who are somehow still on the fence.
And of course, from that list you said, a lot of those names will be completely forgotten in 4 years. I had a look at the 2016 slate initially when they were sort of feeling it out. Elizabeth Warren was encouraged to run, but she didn't then because I guess she figured she couldn't. Beat Hillary, and Hillary won. Hillary, like we're on a first name basis. Hillary Clinton won with 55%. Bernie Sanders,
we know her. We know of her.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders fairly close behind with 43. But the other people that are in the race, and I didn't even write them down. No offense to them, but it's like they're forgotten. Really,
right.
I mean, senators and other people that get a lot of traction, like Booker and Bernie Sanders. Obviously, Beto O'Rourke is a bit of a rock star these days on the cover of every other magazine I've seen. Kamala Harris. From what the polling as it stands now, and you probably looked into this a bit as well, Biden, Sanders, Warren, and Harris and Buttigieg fighting it out for fourth and fifth. They seem to be the top five in terms of percentages.
Mm-hmm.
With Biden, as soon as he entered the race, there's a whole ton of elderly white men waiting for guys like Biden to enter the race. And that may be the race that we see. If we do see a Biden race or even a Sanders race, mm-hmm. it's going to be battle of the 70-year-olds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing against 70-year-olds, but you know, people default to what they know. Biden was VP. It's almost like being an incumbent because he was within a hair. If something had happened to Obama, he was president. So just need to play that up, right? Well, he was already sort of in the chair, right?
Well, I mean—
And I think that carries a lot of weight regardless of Biden's background, what he did and who he touched closely or whatever the hell that's all about.
Well, I mean, that seems to have passed over now. That seemed to have been a flash in the pan. And I guess—
Once they've joked about you in Saturday Night Live, it just sort of goes away right now.
Well, maybe—
He didn't actually assault anybody, I think, is what happened there. But
right.
It is a bit touchy-feely, but—
I think the problems
there— He's not going to jail for it.
I think the problems there, though, remain, particularly sort of how— because he was kind of the new guy in the race that, you know, he was kind of hit all at once with the stuff about, you know, inappropriate touching, with how Anita Hill was treated. And, you know, we've kind of had a whole series of Trump scandals bubble up since then, including like refusing to answer subpoenas and refusing to release things.
Anything and, Biden's done.
You know, the fact that he lost $1 billion in 1 year when he was a real estate developer.
I wish he'd send us some of that.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's just missing. It's gone. Bitcoins or something. We don't know where it is.
Well, this was like several years before Bitcoins, but I know what you mean.
It was in $1,000 bills in briefcases.
But no, it's, you know, Biden's the front runner right now, and Bernie's like right behind him. That's because, yeah, like they are the names. And I heard Cornell Belcher, who's a well-known Democratic pollster, say, you know, he made the point, you know, who was the front runner at this point in 2004? And 2004 is like really like sort of the closest, like in terms of a big field of people like trying to compete for the nomination. And he according to Cornell Belcher, at this point in the 2004 cycle, the person who was the front runner for the Democratic nomination for president was Joe Lieberman.
Whoa.
Who 4 years later was basically persona non grata in the party. So you can't really, it's really hard to say at this point, because someone's a front runner, they are inevitable. And I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to, you know, some people like Marianne Williamson, who I had to actually look up this list to find out who she was. I'm not entirely sure she will still be here by the time we get to Iowa. And certainly somebody like Mike Gravel, who's, you know, who was senator in like the 70s, you know.
He's back.
He's more or less done. But, you know, somebody like I wouldn't put it past, like, Elizabeth Warren, actually, who's actually made a campaign out of campaigning on, like, policy and not, like, I'm cool, look at how cool I am, I'm going to talk on some tables, or I'm going to talk about how I
look, thing, eh?
Or how I studied Norwegian so I can read this author, like, Pete Buttigieg.
Is that an O'Rourke thing?
That's Pete Buttigieg.
Oh, Buttigieg.
You know, so she's, like, making a slow, steady case, like, I have a plan for that. That's her sort of catchphrase. Or maybe even somebody like Eric Swalwell, who does a lot of TV and certainly looks like a TV president.
We've got one now. It's not a we. Sorry. America has one now.
Right.
The world. We are the world, have a TV president.
And, I mean, there's also, you know, he's unlikely to win, but somebody like Jay Inslee is running sort of very on the point of running on we need to deal with climate change, which has automatically turned the discussion, and we'll talk about more of this in a second, but it's automatically making a point because it's actually something being talked about instead of something that was completely ignored like it was in 2019 or in 2016, I should say. So it's impossible to say right now who might come out on top. I think it's fairly pretty wide open, but if I were to put money on it, I don't think it would be Biden.
You don't think it's going to be
Biden?
I don't
think it's going to be Biden.
Okay, well, we'll have to take some bets. Let's just go for a few more months.
I also don't think it would be Bernie, too, because I think Bernie's kind of ascended to, like, the voice of conscience for the Democratic Party, because almost everyone in the party has moved his way on almost everything anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, so is the country. Like, 70% of the country wants Medicare for all. So
it could be Bernie.
I mean, it could be Bernie, but I think...
He's already had a jab at it once, too, but...
Yeah, and I think...
But that's what's different now is that you've got somebody like Warren in the race or even Harris, right, or other people that are – it's not going to be – although this is a record number of people for any primary, isn't it, Republican or Democrat?
It might be. I'd have to double check that. But it's certainly big for diversity in terms of the number of women running, the number of people of color running, mm-hmm. Somebody of a different sexual orientation other than straight running. I think that's – you know, you have an Asian American running. It's pretty – You know, it really shows sort of the differences between the parties where, you know, everyone's behind the old white guy on the one hand. On the other hand, you have, you know, something that's more representation of America in terms of people competing for the presidency. Because, you know, remember back to the 2016 Republican campaign, who was running? Well, it was 15 white guys and I can't remember her name, who used to be the head of Hewlett-Packard and...
Yes.
What's his face? Who's now the HUD secretary? It was the brain surgeon.
Ben Carson. Ben Carson.
Right. Carly Fiorina was the other one. So it was 15 white guys, Carly Fiorina and Ben Carson.
All of whom were far more qualified.
Well, I mean,
than
Ted
Trump,
Cruz,
right?
I guess, isn't tech in Marco Rubio, but you know, we'll
Ted Cruz is a Canadian.
Ted Cruz. Yeah, he
really
is. Yeah, he is. And that was before he went to San Francisco and put on a hood and killed some people parked by the side of the road.
Okay. That
remember,
Ted Cruz.
Remember, Ted Cruz is a Zodiac killer.
Yes.
I'm gonna leave that there.
True story.
He's not.
No.
That was slash ass sarcastic anyway.
The sarcasm expressed here on this show.
Yeah, right. We were trying to squeeze a bit of levity in there because on Monday, while people were covering the royal baby nonstop and hosting, you know, the Meghan Markle... Meghan Markle is awesome.blogspot website host to talk about the royal baby. The UN was saying, hey, nearly 2 million plant and animal species are going to go extinct in the next several decades unless we change our ways. I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but this comes from the UN Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, which is... tough to say, and you actually takes up two lines in your notes.
In the notes.
So,
and they're written in 9-point font. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so, but, you know, they're talking about how over 1 million species are at risk, nearly 2 million species are at risk, 40% of amphibian species, 33% of corals, 10% of insects. The crisis is global here in Canada. Of the nearly 2 million species, we might be looking at, I wrote that down somewhere. Anyway, we're looking at, you know, having serious effects
big
here
chunk.
In Canada as well. 140,000 of these at-risk species live in Canada. So this would have a serious impact on our own ecosystem. And the causes are changing its land and sea use, We have 100 million hectares in tropical forests that have disappeared in 20 years between 1980 and the 2000s. Direct exploitation of organisms, that includes hunting and poaching. Climate change, obviously, that increases the hardships for animals who, say, live in very icy areas where things maybe aren't so icy anymore. Mm-hmm. Pollution, you know, there's a plastic island three times the size of France floating in the Pacific Ocean. You have invasive alien species because as the earth warms, insects and other pests can, you know, move further north, where it's maybe not as cold as it once was.
Like ticks that carry Lyme.
Yeah.
Which is already becoming...
Which is the thing here. Yeah.
An issue here. And yeah. Everything is becoming an issue here. If anyone thinks that it doesn't affect them somehow, and I think our provincial government, among others, seem to think that it doesn't affect them somehow, mm-hmm. especially because this... You know, as we saw in the past week or 2 weeks, the changes to the Ontario Endangered Species Act.
Right, yeah.
This, it all sort of runs along the same line. You know, they've made these changes in the name of
efficiencies.
Choice or efficiencies or whatever.
Yeah.
One of the things was in this that I found deeply disturbing was this, they're calling it, the slang is pay to slay, where it's like you can put it in a development and rather than sort of do anything beneficial for what gets trashed, and in the past, there was a time where you didn't have to do anything, and then it was there's sort of things introduced to do that. I always refer to Bullfrog Mall. They got rid of all the bullfrogs, built a mall, called it Bullfrog Mall, but there's no bullfrogs.
No.
And there's also this, there's some kind of spin on it where it's like, well, if the endangered species are over there somewhere, well, we won't worry about them too much here because they have a little habitat somewhere else. So it's this weird logic all, you know, because... certain species aren't good for efficiencies or whatever, you know, use the lingo however you like. And, you know, the crisis is bigger than me just sort of dragging it towards the Ontario government. But it's stuff like this where they're not even trying. They're not even hiding the fact that they're stomping on the planet and habitat and all those other things that you mentioned. Where is this going to go? Well, we know where it's going to go. And of course, the other thing too, you saw it, Mike Pompeo,
right,
at the Arctic conference, and he's busy saying that, you know, well, melting sea ice could be a good thing. It's new trade opportunities. So it's like, are you serious? This is your approach as well. You know, if the ice melts,
he's pretty serious.
Oh, and by the way, the you know, Canada doesn't really have any claim on the Northwest Passage. It's just this. Because Alaska's up there, I suppose.
Well, also,
and he said some crap about Chinese infrastructure. The Canadians have all kinds of Chinese infrastructure. Completely false. These guys are just spewing crap.
Right.
All of them.
Well, it's worth noting that last Friday...
you seem to be getting amped up about this. Well, it's like really
this kind of gets us into the political things. But of course, last Friday, who did Donald Trump have an hour to an hour and a half call with? By phone, Vladimir Putin.
I think it's like Bolsonaro because he's another one. But
who has a vested interest in trying to stake a claim to the Northwest Passage? Vladimir Putin. So, I mean...
Yeah, we'll get that for you, Vlad. Don't worry.
But in talking about the climate change piece of this, I mean, if you want to see climate change in action, go to the, you know, the Arctic. Go to the North Pole. It's
permafrost
like you
melting.
Rub your face in it.
Yeah.
And of course, Mike Pompeo has a vested political interest. He was a Tea Party nut job before he was Secretary of State. Although
once
I guess
a Tea
maybe
Party
he's still
nut job,
Tea
always.
Party nut job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know the fact that they're going to release this statement for the 14 Arctic countries, and then Mike Pompeo is like, oh, climate change mention? I don't think so. it's
like he's in a teen drama.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
It's actually interesting because
it is teen drama.
There was a report released this week that, you know, in the United States is the third worst country for climate change denial, right behind Indonesia and Saudi Arabia. So once again, the United States, you're an excellent company, you know, with you know, this anti-intellectual vibe. Having said that, we're talking actually less than 10% of people who believe straight up there is no problem. Like it's like 18% of people believe that there is climate change, but it may not necessarily be human cause, which is progress, I suppose. But the point being is that the vast majority of Americans do recognize climate change as an existential problem, which is a good place to build from. Meantime, though, they keep electing people in power who don't want to do anything. And of course, we're in danger of that in this country, too, of electing somebody who doesn't want to do anything about climate change as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I'll send out there, and I didn't get a chance to write about this when I my Guelph Today thing last week when I talked about the Community Energy Initiative, was that for the young people out there, if you are really, truly, genuinely concerned about the environment, you're going to have to get out there and vote. Because I see it every day with the old people. And you ask them if they want to pay, at my day job, you ask them if they want to pay 5 cents for a plastic bag. Some of them will act like you basically ask them to give you a finger, like chop off a finger to get a plastic bag. And some of them don't care. And you, I see all these old biddies, excuse me, that's ageist, but still, every day,
excuse you,
will buy,
I know what you mean,
will buy a
certain
greeting
demographic.
Card, right. They will buy a greeting card and have to get a little plastic bag for that greeting card. Because that's the way they always done it.
Habit.
Right.
Habit kills habitat, right? That's just...
that's pretty good. We should be...
Yeah, I don't know. That just came out.
We should get hired by the World Wildlife Fund.
And you were saying about going up north and seeing what's going on. I was like, if you want to see what's going on, just watch like Blade Runner or Mad Max, because that's where this is going. And I'm being facetious, but there's some
truth. It's not entirely facetious, but I mean, that's... Yeah, it's...
Because the picture...
That's the ugly future, yeah.
The photo that accompanied the New York Times article on this was like a rare sea turtle and had been strangled by some kind of fishing net, right? So it isn't... Climate change is a lot of it, but it's not all of it. When you've got, you know, record amounts of pollutants being dumped into the oceans and on land, overfishing, we're just... we are absolutely clobbering the place.
Right.
And there's nothing that says no part of Earth untouched. You can go wherever... beyond the deepest sea or whatever, and there's microplastics, right? It's we are everywhere. It is us. And you can't let anybody tell you that it isn't.
Right.
There are other factors in play, but we are generally the factor.
The World Wildlife Fund said that on average, the vertebrate population has declined 60% since 1970. That's just 50 years.
And we're vertebrates too, by the way.
Right, well, except where our population isn't declining.
No. But it will.
But, you know,
if this
scientists are saying that it could be like 3 to 7 million years for the planet to recover. Humans have been on Earth for 200,000 years. So let that sink in. We've been on Earth for 200,000 years, but it'll take 7 million years to undo all this damage.
I can't wait to read the hate tweets this week. Where did you get that number, Adam?
It's called the internet. Look it up.
Anyway, we need to promise that we're not going to end on a story like that ever again. No,
maybe not. Yeah. Anyway, that's it for this
edition
of the show.
Remember, the royal prince will be shown at...
No, he won't.
No.
Stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can hear the show again by downloading it from our website every Monday, or you can get it on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to my news and politics site, guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at Archie Harrison Mountbatten Windsor.com.
Good. Keep it there. Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back here next week for more Royal Baby News. Unlikely. See you then.